Mondays here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today as we are each Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, lots of them coming up in the near future. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can see what legislation we're demanding from our elected officials and which elected officials are in your corner and which are not. You can link to our Facebook page as well. You can link to our Orlando Sentinel blog, and you can join our email lists. And again, we'd like to, if you'd like to call a law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And the law firm's website is condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. And finally, again, thank you to so many of you for supporting the Community Association Member Party and for throwing your support behind our 6 legislative proposals. And as you're going to hear on the show, just when we thought we were making headway, at least on education for HOA members, believe it or not, the House bill was recently amended to no longer require certification of board members. Yeah, but we're going to let you know who's responsible for that. And to find out more about how you can get involved and demand long overdue changes to both the condo and HOA statutes, again, visit www.camp2012.net.
Well, last show we spoke about the fact that Floridians are the second rudest people in the country, behind New York. Sports franchises that greedily take your tax dollars to support their team and stadiums. A Korean War veteran who was foreclosed on and nearly lost his home because of $300. And law firms that charge for accepting payments from delinquent owners, causing the homeowner to stay in debt.
Well, this week, Karen, let's start off with something much more important than any of that stuff, and that's wishing the New York Giants congratulations on winning yet another Super Bowl.
Yay!
Against Brady and the Patriots, no less. Another great game.
And I understand you were in Vegas for the big game,
yeah.
Betting on everything that wasn't nailed down.
Pretty much, yeah. And I can tell you, great tradition I have going, Karen. My childhood friends from Brooklyn and my friends from Florida, we all meet in Vegas for every Super Bowl, each and every year, and we're doing it now for 15 years in a row and counting. And it's truly 1 week of my life that I really look forward to.
And winning team.
Cherish it. Well, of course, I bet the Giants, absolutely. But we're all still finally waiting to see the Jets in a Super Bowl. When's that going to happen, Scott?
Please, by the time the Jets make the Super Bowl, you guys will be so old you won't want to go to Vegas anymore, and you'll be watching the game at a clubhouse in some over 55 community, having your early bird dinner and falling asleep around halftime.
Well, the Jets will be back, but let's get some housekeeping matters out of the way. I see the phones are stacking up, but just some housekeeping matters out of the way first. Quickly, let's remind everybody that while HOA board members don't have to, board members in a condominium, you guys have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board, or you are suspended. And one way to get certified is by taking our Condo Craze board member certification course. And for the first time ever, Floridians now can sign up for any one of 4 different locations. And here they are, again, 4 different locations. Next week, that's next Saturday, February 18th, at 12 o'clock noon at the Hard Rock Hotel in Orlando. Then about a week after that, February 29th, at the PM Expo event at the South Florida Fairgrounds in West Palm Beach. March 27th at 9:30 at the PM Expo event in Punta Gorda, Florida. And then April 5th, we're back at our old stomping grounds at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. To register for any of our seminars, just go to condocrazeandhoas.com. and you will get verification back from Brian.
Yeah, and to all you new board members out there who have just been elected in 2012, come learn about your fiduciary duties, budgets, reserve funding, how to notice and conduct meetings, your governing documents, all the new laws that get passed, and whether or not any of these new laws even apply to your community. There's always good food and drink, and best of all, it's free.
Absolutely, and again, thanks to all the callers who compliment us on the Condo Craze Seminar, and I say this week in and week out now, we are definitely honored to serve as a law firm to so many of our listeners, but we're even prouder that 2,000 of you now have chosen us to be your teachers at these seminars. And again, if anybody actually wants to see photos of the Condo Craze seminars, just go to Facebook and search for Condo Craze and HOAs, and lots of pictures are up there on our website. And make sure to click the like button to become a fan of the show. And again, if you want to register for any of the four seminars, whether it's Hollywood, Palm Beach, Punta Gorda, or Orlando, just sign up at CondoCrazeAndHOAs.com. And how about we take our first call? Let's go with Alfred in Boca.
Hello.
How are you, Alfred?
Pretty good. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a former board member. I was on the board for 12 years. I lived in Boca in a condo for 26 years. I'm familiar with 718 and the administrative code, and I am absolutely, completely frustrated because I cannot get the board, either I or the people with me, for the past 5 years to hold a board meeting other than the compulsory members meeting and the budget meeting. We do not have board meetings.
Isn't that
now,
amazing?
My question.
Yeah. You raise a good point, because most people don't even know that the Florida statutes do not require a specific number of board meetings every year other than to have the budget meeting and to have the annual unit owners meeting.
I know that. Yeah. I know that. But we do have no contact, the owners, 315 of us. We do not have any contact with the board. We're in the process now of trying to get a petition, 30% of the owners, to call for a special meeting so we can find out what in blazes is going on. We have, over the past 4 years, our fees, our maintenance fees, have increased by almost 40%, including last year, not this year, but last year, the year before. They've gone from $500 a month to $750
wow.
a month.
Really?
But yeah, that's a wow, especially a lot of these people. It's a relatively upscale condominium. There are relatively few people left here because they had to get out because they couldn't take the $2,100 a quarter for condo fees.
Right.
But my question is, we had a special special assessment last year in May of 2011. I have been after this board. I have got over 200 pages of records, requests, et cetera, et cetera. And they have not, in 5 years, leaned any properties, even though we've had one family that was 4 years behind. They were still living here, and they owed $40,000 in maintenance fees.
Right.
I could get no information from the attorney. They wouldn't talk to me. They said this was a legal matter. I understand that legal suits are not public knowledge, but I can't find out what in God's name is going on. Well, anyway, I'm going to try and make this quick because you got other people waiting. We had a special election, and we had in there were two condominiums, East and Southwest. In the Southwest condominium, they're operated by one association, which is okay. But the Southwest condominium, we had $110,000 in unpaid maintenance fees over the 30-day minimum. Some of them have gone in for 2 years. I asked and asked and asked. They never did anything, but they have a special assessment. So last year, in the special assessment was $75,000 payment of these unpaid maintenance fees. We paid it, or it was a 12-month payment. We got two more months to go. My question is, on a special assessment that has to have a special reason for it, I can't get them to tell me what they did with the $75,000.
Well, the way it sounds, let me just cut you off for a second, Alfred. The way it sounds is I'm guessing that $75,000 was not used for any one specific purpose other than to pay the bills as they became due and owing. That's why we tell, when we certainly give our seminar, we tell communities that when it's time to prepare your annual budget, that you include a line item in there. Not only do we recommend it, but the DBPR recommends it as well. put a line item in there for anticipated bad debt so that at the end of the year, you don't run into the trouble that your association seems to be running into. You don't have to pass a special assessment to cover unpaid bills. But in terms of also finding out about whether or not your community is engaged in litigation against owners who are not paying, I heard you make a statement in there that those are not public record. Yes, they are. Any unit
of course
owner,
they are.
Yeah, any unit owner can go to the clerk's office in their in the county in which the community is located, and you can find out which persons are in foreclosure, which aren't, and whether or not your community filed liens or foreclosures against anybody. But Alfred, sorry to cut you off.
Thank you, Alfred.
Got to take the next call. How about we go to Joe in Boynton Beach?
Yeah, hi. I've got kind of a unique situation here. We're in a community where we have a zero-lot line, and we have somebody who's disabled, who's totally blind, lives in our house, and we've asked for an extension to the zero-lot property line. And what we did is we went to our next-door neighbor, because you're not allowed to step on their property, and asked them to send a letter to the Homeowners Association indicating that they have no problem with us extending to the zero property line, because the reason why you can't is because you'd be stepping on your neighbor's property.
Right.
So, anyway, and they did turn us down. Well, what's interesting, there are a number of other homeowners in the community that have extended to the zero property line, and they are being grandfathered in. We've had a couple situations. It's my brother-in-law who lives with us, where he got out of the car, stepped onto our neighbor's property and actually fell into the electrical pole, and as far as a safety issue, we did send a letter, and we got the waiver from our neighbor, and others who don't have this safety situation in the community have been grandfathered in because they did it years ago.
Right.
So I don't know how to approach this, and we're really very frustrated. The Architectural Control Committee turned us down, but yet one of our neighbors three houses away got grandfathered in.
Yeah, well, really what you're describing is a situation of selective enforcement where they're allowing certain people to do things and not allowing perhaps certain people to do those same things. But
I guess I just want to know, what do you plan on extending to make it safer to the zero lot line, like the driveway?
Yeah, we plan on extending the driveway.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, this might be the case where you might be asking for a reasonable accommodation from the board to supersede the governing documents for a disability. This may be something that federal law protects you over, because if you do make a request, and of course if the next door neighbor is more than amenable to, you know, helping you out with this, you know, this could possibly be deemed a reasonable accommodation in a housing.
I think the neighbor is not.
That's great.
Though.
Yeah, good answer, Scott. I agree.
I thought he said the neighbor was okay with it.
Yeah, the neighbor was okay. Just the association.
Yeah, the neighbor was okay. Then the neighbor did send a letter to the to the Homeowners Association and said the only thing you can't do is we don't want you to flare out on our property, so we can go to.
I think Scott gave you some great advice there. What you might want to do is contact your local HUD office, Scott. I guess that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Housing and Urban Development.
Yes.
Give them a call, and they can tell you how to go about filing a complaint against your association. And perhaps once that complaint gets filed, that might put an end to this real quick. Okay.
Now, at some point, what I was also thinking is asking you to represent us if necessary.
Well, you give us a call after you file that complaint. Give us a call.
Before you file the complaint.
Yeah, probably a good idea, right?
Yeah.
855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. But, Joe, I apologize. We got to take our first break. Again, studio lines are open, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Cheryl and Dennis, we see you there. Just hang on, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis. I'm with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. We see you on the lines there. They are lit up. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show. You can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
And how about we remind everybody that you can actually get certified without leaving your home. And as we've done many times now, we can actually come to your association and give the board certification course at your association and meet with the new board. And it's a fantastic opportunity to not only get certified, but also a great time to talk about what the association needs and demands of their law firm in the year ahead. And again, it's all free of charge. If you're interested, again, give us a call, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And with that, let's go with Cheryl from Hollywood, who's been holding a while. How are you, Cheryl?
Hi, okay. How are you?
Okay, how can we help?
Okay, I have two questions. One is, in order to be a board of on the board of directors, one of the unit owners let us know, oh, by the way, this whole year, two of your unit owners are not owners, so they were illegally on the board. Hmm. So then we found out, yes, their name was not on the deed, but okay, their spouse was. So now I went into the records, I found everything in the dots, and it says that you can be, because it says each member of the board of directors shall be either the owner of a unit, have an interest therein, or be an employee of such owner.
Well, no, the way I take that to read is, no, if you're not an owner of the unit, then you cannot serve on the board, at least in that circumstance.
So what does it say? Have an interest therein?
Well, I don't really know what it means. Scott, what would you guess? Well, to have an interest therein, there's absolutely no interest that I find that, you know, a spouse who's not on the deed would have.
The interest of the spouse.
Just because you're a spouse doesn't mean that you have an interest in the property. There is no ownership interest in the property. There's perhaps some homestead issues that come into play, but they're certainly don't have any ownership interest in the property. Yeah. So I would take the position that, no, they are not eligible for board membership. As a matter of fact, certain documents indicate specifically that you don't even have to be an owner in a community,
right,
to serve on a board of directors.
Right.
And I think that's not what this says. So that's why I would think here you'd have to be an owner.
But even my property manager, when I brought it to him, he saw it, and now he said we might have something to stand on.
No.
Because it does not say you cannot be.
Well, the way I interpret that is, no, you have to have some ownership interest in the property. I don't see it. You know, I don't see it any other way, quite frankly. So I would say no. So I would say no. You know,
I get what you're saying, but it says you shall be either the owner of a unit, comma, have an interest therein. So if you're not an owner of the unit,
yeah, I don't know what have an interest actually means if it's not an ownership interest. I don't know if you can really have any other type of interest. So I'm going to say again, I think in that particular situation, you would absolutely need to be a unit owner. But what we can do is, I certainly wouldn't mind researching it and seeing if there's any other cases out there. Call us at the office, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze, and perhaps there's an arbitration decision that actually speaks about it.
Right.
You
know,
okay?
You know, Glazer, that's the problem with you. You are all condo law all the time. No other interests.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. All right. How about we go to Dennis in Pompano?
Oh,
hi.
Hello.
Hi,
guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking the call. My question is about elections. We have a current election, 110-unit condominium with three vacancies and five people. So they sent out, my question will go through, like, soiled ballots, voids, what voids an election?
Wait, slow it down, Dennis. Wait, Dennis, slow it down. I can't hear you. 110 units.
Okay.
110 units.
Yeah, kind of. We have a current election. There are three openings with five people running for office, and my question line, which I'll get to, is about ballots that are voided and multiple ballots sent out and along those lines. And what happened was that they sent out the ballots, and the first one, the secretary put the unit number on it, where, you know, you're supposed to cut it off, put it in the ballot envelope, and put it in the return envelope with your unit number on it. So someone called right away, said it's a secret ballot and you can't do that. So she put up a note on the elevator, you know, that there's a correction and don't put your unit number in there. So she sent out a second notice, corrected page 2 here, for the ballots, but it did not include a ballot return envelope or the or an address envelope with your number, your name on it. And it also included meeting minutes and another envelope about whether you wanted to put your phone number on the condo list.
Right.
And I saw her the other day, and I said, look, I said, number one, you shouldn't be sending out multiple mailings in an election. You
right.
should just be inserting the ballot. She said, well, I can do that. It's more expedient. And I said, well, how are you going to run these ballots then? You know, I said, there was no ballot envelope in the second mailing. And she said, well, we only use one. I can't have two of them. We'll have an election monitoring group. I said, but who is going to snip off this? Well, why didn't you do that? People throw it away. They see that it's not a secret ballot anymore on the first election. What the, so it's just kind of confusing. Are there any guidelines to watch for this? Or?
Well, yeah, there's no question about it. You hit the nail on the head when you said it's supposed to be a secret ballot process, and by the fact the association manager, I guess, made a mistake by sending out the ballot-only envelopes with the unit numbers on them. And then when she tried to correct the problem by putting up that, I guess, that notice that tells people, what did she actually tell them, not to actually put their ballots in there from now on? So some people might have returned returned it with their unit number on there, and some people did not, and some people might not have returned it at all. So obviously,
right.
it created. If you can show that it prevented some people from actually voting in the election and created confusion, yeah, it's time to do a new election. That's how I would do it, because the results, however they come out, are going to be challengeable, perhaps.
Sounds like a mess.
Yeah, but we got to take our first break. Again, taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. We're in our second half hour. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585, and clarifying, having an interest in...
Yeah, what that actually means. Now, Cheryl called in a few minutes ago, and she, if you remember, reviewed her documents, and her documents say... that not only can a spouse can a unit owner serve on a board, but anyone with an interest therein. And she had a question as to whether or not a spouse who doesn't own the unit can actually serve on the board. I took the position that they can't, and it all boiled down to an interpretation of what does or an interest therein mean. And Scott actually came up with a good suggestion during the break that an or an interest therein language may mean that suppose your unit is owned by a corporation or an LLC and you have an ownership interest in that corporation or LLC. That would allow you to serve on the board of directors because you have an interest in the corporation that actually owns the unit. So good going, Scott. I think that's the exact way to answer that question.
Yeah.
And on that note, how about we go to another Scott in Palm Beach Gardens?
Scott? Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. How are you, Scott?
Thank you. Fine. Thank you. Listen, I'm in three homeowners associations.
Well, lucky you.
As many of us are in homeowners associations. And my question is pretty quick and simple. Is there a law that precludes homeowners associations from publishing in their newsletter the delinquent accounts on maintenance fees?
Yes.
yeah,
that's the easy answer.
It just seems to me that with peer pressure, you know, that it would be so much weightier if someone saw that their next door neighbor hadn't paid their association fees in 3 months and they're buying new cars and blah, 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 blah.
We always tell our clients that, again, you face the possibility of being sued in federal court for what's called publication of a deadbeat list. So we tell all our clients not to do it, not a good idea. However, that being said, if somebody wants to come into the office or make a records request to get the actual records and see who's delinquent, yes, they would be able to do it. But should the association actually take that information and publish it in the community newsletter or post it on the wall saying, look, all these people are delinquent? No, I would not do that because, again, that could not only perhaps get you sued in federal court, maybe it could result in other state court causes of action like intentional infliction of emotional distress. And suppose, God forbid, you made an error, too, and you embarrassed the person after doing that. You know, attorneys, management companies, members of the board, you make errors from time to time, too, and so do the banks. So I'd be real careful about doing that, and I would caution associations not to do it. Prevent yourself from being a defendant in a lawsuit. And also, I'm not quite sure how much peer pressure would actually put on the person.
I bet it would work.
I don't know. If a person's a few thousand dollars behind, I don't think just by advertising the fact that they're a few thousand dollars behind is going to make them actually pay. They're either going to pay or they're not going to pay.
Right.
All right? But that's the advice today,
Scott. I appreciate your advice.
Thank you very much.
You.
All right. How about an Attorney General's Office update? As all of our listeners already know, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi has taken a lot of heat due to the firing of those two top prosecutors in her office who were involved in the foreclosure investigations against the banks.
Whoops. Can we get rid of Scott? Thank you.
Thanks, Frank. Okay, well, the Florida Department of Financial Services issued a report in the last 2 weeks that says neither the Attorney General nor anybody else in her office broke any rules in a dismissal of those two prosecutors.
Yeah, those two prosecutors who were fired said they believe that the decision to fire them was political and that they believe pressure from Tallahassee was one of the main reasons they were let go.
I don't know. Do you find it strange, you guys, that these two prominent attorneys believe that they were fired because of the powers that be in Tallahassee didn't want them being aggressive against the banks, which you've been pretty much on the same firing line?
Exactly. Well, why not let our listeners be the judge? How many of you guys can actually mention one criminal prosecution of a bank in Florida as a result of the robo-signing scandal, or mention one new law that makes the bank pay more money to an association when they actually foreclose on a home and take back title? And until someone can show me evidence that the banks are not getting a complete free pass from Tallahassee in regards to what they owe the associations, I'll tell you, I'm going to err on the side of agreeing with the two prosecutors who were fired. But how about we take Charles's call from Fort Lauderdale? Charles?
Hello.
How are you, Charles?
Hello.
Hey, Chuck. What's going on?
Yeah, I have a question in reference to publishing lists of owners. What can be included on that list? Phone numbers, email addresses, etc.
No, we're saying don't publish them, Charles.
No, I think I don't know if he's following up on the deadbeat list. He's just talking about lists.
I'm not talking about deadbeat lists. I'm talking about a normal directory for everybody in the association.
Just a directory of people who actually live in the community? What can be disseminated?
Yes.
Okay. At this point, the statute provides that you can provide a list of the unit owner names, the owners, and their unit numbers. If they give you permission, you can go further and you can give out their telephone numbers and their email addresses. But in order to do that, you would actually have to get permission from the unit owner. Okay, but other than the name and the unit number, that's it. If you want to do more than that, you can do it if you get permission from the unit owners. That would allow you to create like a community directory.
How about their, quote, northern address
address? Cannot be released again without their permission. Absolutely not.
Okay.
Understand.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yes.
Okay, the big news of the week. Let's talk about, the buy your way out of trouble front. We all learned that in the news this past week that 49 states, including Florida, have settled with Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Ally Financial for approximately $26 billion to settle charges involving improper foreclosures based upon robo-signing and seizures of homes without paperwork. And Florida is actually expected to get about $8 billion of those dollars.
Yeah, I won't see any of it.
Probably not.
Well, the president said that the settlement will begin to turn the page on an era of recklessness that has left so much damage in its wake. In fact, most of the relief will go to those who owe far more than their home is worth and are underwater. The relief is expected over the next 3 years.
Yeah, here's what we know so far about the settlement. At least $17 billion is going to go towards reducing principal owed by homeowners who are underwater and behind on their mortgages. and there may be principal reductions for as many as 1 million people. 750,000 other underwater borrowers who are current on their mortgage, and this was a lot of people were screaming about this. What about those people who actually did the right thing and remain current on their mortgage? Well, they're going to get help too, and they're going to be able to refinance at lower rates. And finally, about $1.5 billion is going to go to homeowners foreclosed on with robo-signed documents. And I understand, though, that's only going to result in about $1,500 to $2,000 per family that was actually foreclosed on using the robo-signed documents.
Well, we always said on the show that the bank shouldn't be allowed to buy their way out of the criminal prosecution for filing tens of thousands of robo-signed affidavits in our courts. And are banks now off the hook criminally?
Yep.
Because of this settlement?
Yeah. Eric, can I jump in here for a second? You know, listen, everything that the banks did that, you know, has been exposed by, you know, law firms and the media and whatnot, you know, it's terrible and they'd have to pay. But let's not forget, there are very few people that got foreclosed on, you know, that didn't pay. I mean, the fact is, you know, whether the banks broke the rules, it's bad for society in general, but they were more or less only suing people that
didn't pay.
That didn't pay.
I agree. Most of the people were foreclosed on are people that did not pay. However, lots of those people, and we hear the stories all the time, just before they were getting foreclosed on or even during the time that they were getting foreclosed on, they had actually worked out settlement deals with the banks.
Oh.
And notwithstanding the fact that some of them even had paperwork to prove it, the banks filed foreclosures against them unnecessarily, and the settlement monies, you know, crept up dramatically, which prevented them from actually settling their case. But, Karen, back to your question as to whether or not the banks are off the hook criminally. Apparently not, and according to what I read, the settlement doesn't preclude criminal prosecutions from being pursued. And those entities that clogged the courts with these false affidavits, yes, they should be prosecuted criminally. Let's see if it happens, and let's hope that this obviously all works out.
Let's save everybody the suspense. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, probably not. It would not surprise me if there were no criminal prosecutions here in Florida. But let's take a break, and when we get back, we're going to give you an update as to whether or not it's illegal to counsel someone that they can stay in their home for years without paying your mortgage, how the Florida Supreme Court made it a little more difficult for the AG's office to investigate law firms that were doing massive amounts of foreclosure work, and why Florida may be in trouble because the people who live here are not saving for their future. And we'll take your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
The final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL, Big Talk 850 WFTL. And I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer, Scott Shapiro. We are taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. You want to go to Blaine in Palm City?
Yes, let's go to Blaine. How are you, Blaine?
Oh, fine. I got in a little late on your program, and my better half said she thought she heard that the HOA board members no longer need to be certified by a recent amendment.
Well, let's put it this way. There's been legislation filed in the Florida House of Representatives that would have required certification for HOA board members, just like condo members need to, and the bill was filed by Representative Moraitis, and again, it would have required this mandatory certification for board members, but because apparently the House leadership considered it too much government, it sounded like yet another unnecessary mandate. Representative Moraitis was asked to withdraw his bill, and unfortunately he caved into the pressure, and he did in fact withdraw his bill. And I got to tell you, apparently requiring condo board members to get certified is not too much government interference, but requiring HOA board members to get certified is. I don't get it. I got to tell you, if anybody out there knows of any possible conceivable rational reason why board members in condos and HOAs should be subjected to different standards in order to remain a director, please enlighten me, because I got to tell you, I'm at a loss. And, apparently it's important for condo board members to swear that they read their governing documents. But board members in an HOA can use their HOA documents to, you know, fill in the blank.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to at this point, Blaine. Okay.
Okay.
Right now,
yeah,
it looked like that's where we were headed. Certainly, I can tell you, almost every single practitioner of association law that I know was in favor of it. These classes are free.
Right.
The HOA members who, you know, what's so amazing is the HOA members are so eager to learn something that they come to the condo certification class just, you know, on the hope that they're going to learn something about how an association should run. So we thought it was a great bill. Representative Moraitis did the right thing by filing it. Why he caved into the pressure, I don't know. I think it's horrible that he did. I'd like to get his comments on it. He's welcome to come on the show anytime he wants and let us know why he caved and removed that requirement.
Somebody with money.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, you know, couldn't tell you. But there was a story running in a Daily Business Review last week that actually was kind of funny. And it says that the Attorney General's office got an injunction against what's called a strategic default company that the Attorney General's office said misled consumers into believing that they could live years for free in their home through the use of strategic default. Now, her complaint alleges violations of the Florida Deceptive and Unfair Trade Practices Act. Now, to me, I got to tell you, Scott, maybe you agree, this is the funniest story I've heard in some time. A firm actually got in trouble for taking money for people and misleading them by telling them that they could live years for free in their homes.
Doesn't sound misleading to me.
Now, call me crazy, but how is that misleading people? Is that not what's going on in basically every foreclosure case all over the state and maybe even all over the country? You know, people staying in their homes year after year without paying the bank or the association anything, but suddenly now it's a crime to tell people they can stay in their home without paying their mortgage or assessment.
Well, you know, it'll just help things, you know.
Yeah.
That's, you know, let's you know, really stir the pot again and say that. I would bet that the overwhelming majority of foreclosure cases out there right now, this defendants simply don't pay their mortgages that they simply owed. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, being defrauded by the bank or anything like that. The only thing keeping them in their home is their lawyer, who is engaging in all kinds of discovery and motion practice that keep the client in the property for years without paying anyone, except, of course, the lawyer.
Right, yeah. And by the way, Scott and I guess we're not saying that there aren't some people out there who don't have legitimate defenses. They do. There are plenty of them. But the fact remains that the people who got foreclosed upon, like you say, Scott, simply didn't pay. But, you know, to show you how crazy this state is, if a bank commits fraud and perjury on a massive scale and files, you know, thousands of these fraudulent affidavits in our court system against homeowners that they loan money to, they remain untouched. They aren't prosecuted or penalized in any way whatsoever. But if someone actually accepts money for counseling you on how to beat the bank and show you how to stay in your home, apparently you get in trouble for it. That's the way it works.
You get what you vote for.
But I understand that the Attorney General's office does want some more power to investigate foreclosure law firms that were representing the banks.
Yeah, and actually we need to talk about that. But how about we take Beverly's call from Boca? Beverly, how are you?
Hi.
How are you, Beverly?
I'm okay. Fine, thank you. I came in kind of at the end, and you said something about you know, them helping people that were, like, in foreclosure. And one of the things you said, and if you're current, they'll help you, get, like, to get a lower rate.
Right, exactly. The way okay, I understand... So go ahead.
Here's my question. You know, I'm self-employed, and my income has gone... It's half of what it was, okay? And so I went through this thing where they, you know, it was a government thing or whatever. This is going on for almost 2 years. They play such games with you, I don't even want to go into it. And at the end, I did everything, and I'm still current. You know, I went through all my savings because my home is really important to me.
Sure.
You know, like, my credit has, I'm a professional, my credit is shot to you know where.
Mm-hmm.
And I borrowed money from everybody. Like, I'm borrowed out from my family. I just don't want to lose my home. And I didn't want not to pay because I didn't want to have legal fees. I didn't want foreclosure. You know, I figured I'm doing the right thing. And then at the end, after they put me through all this rigmarole, the thing is, oh well, you don't qualify because you're current.
Yeah, you know what?
I mean, why did you?
You're the person that is getting
screwed.
Yeah, exactly.
Most, right, more than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you've done everything right, and there's really not much to help you, but everybody that did everything wrong, you know.
Right, seems to be getting help. But again, the way we understand the settlement, at least the way the settlement's being reported right now, you know, on the internet and in the newspapers, is finally Congress, well, it actually has nothing to do with Congress. It's actually a settlement between the attorney generals and the banks. The attorney generals, I should say, hear your cries, and they understand that people just like you need help. And because you remain current, you are, from what I understand, going to be rewarded with the ability to refinance the loan on your home at reduced rates. Now, just because this settlement took place, I think it would be crazy for everybody to think that Monday morning they could pick up their phone and automatically be subject to rate reductions right away. It's probably going to take months, if not longer, for the actual details of this settlement to get worked out. So, again, just hang in there for another couple of months.
Okay, can you tell me what the settlement is? You know, how do I refer to it? Well, I didn't hear. I just came in at the tail end.
Yeah, the settlement in a nutshell is $17 billion that are going back to the states.
Also, and if you're like Beverly and you missed any portion of our show, you can listen to all of our past episodes at our website,
yes,
condocrazeandhoas.com. So why don't you just check out everything on there?
Right, exactly. Actually, it's $26 billion, by the way. But everybody, thank you again
for
tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs, and speak to you again next week.